from stpcatalyst.com.
Welcome to Political Party with Adam Smith. We're lucky to have former Congressman David Jolly launching a movement these days. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, Adam. Thank you.
We're going to cut to the chase, first of all. You're a Pinellas guy, former Congressional District 13, now Charlie Crist District. Charlie is always in the mix for potential campaigns, and there is a fair amount of buzz that he could run for governor against Ron DeSantis this time. What does that do to you? There's also a fair amount of buzz that you could run for governor, and if Charlie does, one would think your seat, your old seat, would have some interest.
Yeah, look, let's hit it head on, and let's first take the Charlie factor. Charlie's running for governor, no question. I mean, he's calling everybody, trying to build both a donor network and a support network. He sees what looks like a weak Democratic field for governor, which I would agree, provided Val Demings chooses to run for Senate instead of governor. And so Charlie likely sees an opportunity to return to Tallahassee. I'll also take this question first and foremost as a Pinellas County resident who served in Congress and left it all on the field, if you will. Charlie's in the majority on the Appropriations Committee on one of the key subcommittees, actually a couple of them, both responsible for climate and environment as well as defense installations. And Charlie has an opportunity to grow in leadership within the Congress in what is a very safe seat that he likely could hold until he chooses not to. I don't say this as a potential candidate for governor. I say this as a Pinellas County resident. I think Charlie should stay in Congress. I think he's doing well by the people of Pinellas County. And I like to think that our representative could be very effective. If you look at the last race, the case made against Charlie politically in the November 3rd race, I think the Republican nominee would have not been able to represent this county anywhere near the way Charlie has, and hopefully the way I did as well. That being said, Charlie's going to choose his own track, and I think he's running for governor.
So just to not to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're saying Charlie has done a pretty good job as a congressman for Pinellas County.
Yeah, I certainly do. Look, if I have a fault, if you will, with Charlie, but this is true of most career politicians, I don't see the policy and intellectual leadership that attracts me to politics, right? I'm a policy wonk. I like to be a mile deep on all the issues. I like to try to resolve the hard issues. You know, I got in a lot of trouble as a Republican trying to resolve a way forward for conservatives on marriage equality, on gun control, on campaign finance. But I did so because I felt like that was my responsibility to lead, not follow. So look, I don't think Charlie's somebody who is exerting national leadership at times. For instance, he was very quiet around many people's, including mine, grievances against Donald Trump. He was late to the game with impeachment. He has been late on oversight. But in terms of serving Pinellas County and doing right by Pinellas County and looking out for investing in Pinellas County, Charlie certainly is doing a great job. And in this past race, I'm glad Charlie prevailed over the Republican nominee.
And his office itself, his staff responsiveness, in terms of meeting the needs of constituents, et cetera, how are they doing?
So I can't really speak to the constituent service level here at home. What I do know is he hired a career Capitol Hill staff pro in Washington, that at least in terms of Charlie's responsibilities on the Appropriations Committee, the ability to reflect Florida's priorities on the Appropriations Committee, he's got a fantastic chief of staff in that place. That's the only visibility I have. I really don't know in terms of constituent services, which obviously coming from the Bill Young world was something that I tried to excel in when I was in office.
Okay, so all that said, that Charlie should stay in your opinion, that he's got a great position.
But he's not going to, Adam.
then what does that do to your thinking? Are you seriously thinking about running for that seat if it opens?
Well, no. Look, I'm building out an infrastructure to run for governor of the state of Florida as an independent candidate in the next cycle. And Charlie's decision doesn't change that whatsoever. I'm spending this year building out the infrastructure so that I can make a final decision towards the end of this calendar year whether to make an independent run. I became a no party affiliate voter now maybe 2 years ago. It was the summer before the midterms. I wanted to make the move before the elections of 2018. And I love being unaffiliated, Adam. I knew I would have some relief kind of finally breaking from the Republican Party. I had never been a good enough Republican for the 20 plus years I'd been a part of the party. I knew I'd feel that relief. What I didn't anticipate was the relief from just being untethered to parties. And it's not to say they don't have a place. They certainly do. But think about it intuitively. When you sign up for a party based on one issue you care about, you kind of have to accept the entire dogma. And that's not where most Florida voters are. It's certainly not where I am. So I'm an independent. If I run in 22 for governor, it will be as an independent, and it will test that viability formula that independent runs often have to challenge.
And then you saw there was one of the pollsters, I think it was Tony Fabrizio, a DeSantis guy, or at least was a DeSantis guy, said, you running as an independent would be the greatest gift Ron DeSantis could get. Essentially, you'd guarantee the Democrats couldn't win.
And I have Democratic pollsters saying it would take from Ron DeSantis. That's the fascinating thing. And I don't have any polling yet, but we know since January 6th, Republican voters are deregistering. I think in Pinellas County, the number was over 2,000 in the week after January 6th. I am a former Republican, and I don't meet a lot of Democratic litmus tests. So I think this intuitive feeling people say, well, he might take from Democrats. Maybe it's because of my contributions on MSNBC, but it would be interesting how it plays out. There's other dynamics at play as well, Adam, which is this. Suppose I named a high-profile LG from the very beginning. Suppose it was a D or an R. That changes the formula as well. And I would also say, and this is more to my Democratic friends, not the Fabrizio types, this notion that I might be a spoiler for Democrats in the 22 cycle, I would say Democrats haven't won the governor's mansion in 28 years. So if I'm spoiling anything, is it another runner-up position for Democrats in 22? Or maybe Democrats might consider that the best way to change leadership in Tallahassee is some type of coalition that puts an independent in the governor's mansion to succeed Ron DeSantis.
So I spent too long covering politics, and as a result of that, I'm too cynical.
You're cynical, I know.
And so I just think, as much as I love the idea of breaking the two-party monopoly or duopoly, that it's just impossible, that you can't raise the money, you can't set up the infrastructure, and I think a lot of people feel that way.
So let me respond a little bit to that. First of all, I'm not naive, and if it doesn't look like it's viable run, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to ask supporters to go with me through a run that's not viable. What I would say is we are building infrastructure right now. We have seen, even since my acknowledgement broke a week or two ago, small dollar donors have come into the Serve America movement, the political organization I'm involved in, that also will be doing infrastructure building alongside my decision making. But I would also say, about once in a generation, you do see an opportunity for independent viability. People forget that Ross Perot led the presidential race in 92, late in the summer, with about 90 days to go. Before he dropped out, he was leading Bill Clinton and George Bush. Now, as others have tried to replicate that moment, we've seen fits and starts, right? We know Angus King is an independent in Maine, Bernie Sanders an independent, but really a Democrat in Vermont. But Adam, when I go back to saying I'm not naive, I would need the moment to meet me halfway in this 22 cycle. But if you were to tell me, given my, I don't know, 20, 30 years in politics, if there were ever a cycle where an independent might test the theory of the case and might be viable, I think it could be the 22 cycle. And that's why I'm not making a decision today. I'm going to continue to work towards a decision at the end of this calendar year. We'll see what it looks like then.
And so let's talk about the Serve America movement. You're the chairman or the executive chairman, I think is the title.
That's right.
My sense is it's sort of a center-right group. Help define it. What is it?
Yeah, no, I'd love that, because some people say it's center-left. I'll tell you what it is. It's the only big tent coalition out there today and the big tent political party. It started in 2017. And it has run unity tickets for governor and lieutenant governor in the state of New York and the state of Connecticut. It obviously is looking at the state of Florida. We're looking at Texas, Virginia, Colorado, Iowa as well in this next cycle. We are challenging this notion that the duopoly doesn't have to be something we accept, that everything is controlled just by Republicans and Democrats. And as we've talked about, that it's a long shot, right? It's a moonshot. But we know that as people register, we're seeing people register at 30% or 40% as no party affiliates. At the point of registration, they're rejecting the duopoly. So why on the first Tuesday in November are we seeing a 50-50 performance? The theory of our case is that they don't see choices in equity on the first Tuesday in November like they see choices in equity when they register, right? They're all generic affiliations when you register. But on the ballot in November, you're not seeing a viable independent candidate that actually competes with policy and campaign finance and infrastructure. So in many states, though, the two parties have put enormous hurdles in place to party building. And party building and ballot access are similar concepts, but they actually too often get conflated. State by state, the Serve America movement, SAM, is having to tackle ballot access and party building. So we achieved party status in New York. Governor Cuomo has kneecapped us and has tried to take it away. We're moving that direction in Connecticut. As I mentioned, we're moving that direction in Florida, Texas, Virginia, Iowa, other states as well.
And then you would run, if you run for governor or Congress, I'm still leaving that door open, as a Serve America movement nominee or candidate, assuming you got the nomination.
Yeah, look, I'm the chairman of the Serve America movement, and so it would be fully associated with SAM. Whether or not the right decision sequentially is to form the SAM party in Florida and run as a SAM nominee, or to run as an independent with the SAM endorsement, and then the SAM party status follows that. It's a question of sequence, but it also goes to viability. It goes to infrastructure. It goes to campaign finance. So look, those are hard decisions. And here, I'll share something with you that few politicians would probably share in this moment. I likely will open both a state committee and a federal committee fairly soon. And, you know, that will get attacked as, oh, Jolly doesn't know what he wants to run for. That's not true. It's that I want to comply with the law, both state and federal. And if I'm going to investigate viability, if we're going to engage in polling, and if questions will include both state office and federal office, then I want to do that above board with full transparency, full accountability for the whole world to see. That's also part of the spirit of the Serve America movement. You know, we are a big tent party that says, bring whatever your ideology is, progressive, conservative, moderate. The challenge today is not lack of ideology. The challenge is we don't have a platform where we can come together and figure out the best solutions from among these contrasting ideologies. So SAM's core principles are the big tent, but it's also accountability, transparency, problem solving. For most people, ideology is the default for their political affiliation. We're kind of moving political affiliation to a different spectrum and saying, maybe ideology is very important, but maybe it's not the most important thing to you. Maybe the most important thing is a government that solves the pandemic and solves immigration and solves the economy. Because for the most part, if voters see problems being solved, ideology is a secondary factor to their evaluation of those solutions.
So there are so many, I don't know if you object to the term never Trumpers, but there's so many Republican anti-Trumpers that I know, and many of them are good friends, you, Nicole Wallace, Anna Navarro, Tim Miller, Rick Wilson, Nicole, and sometimes I hear you on TV, and you sound like a passionate Democrat, all of you, and instead of the Republican, I think, have they changed? Has Trump turned them more liberal, or at least more centrist than, what am I missing? I remember when you ran for office against Alex Sink, one of the things that you won on was running against the Affordable Care Act. And I know you've had a shift on that, but.
Well, no, look, constitutionally, I still object to the individual mandate. And I will tell you the one bill I introduced on the Affordable Care Act was a repeal of the individual mandate. I think that's a constitutional issue. But without getting into all the politics of healthcare, what I will tell you is I think we can make healthcare more affordable, more accessible, using the hand of government. And that is a departure from where Republicans are, who just think the free market will solve everything. That's not true. The market economy around healthcare has been completely broken by generations of policymakers. And for Republicans to suggest that somehow the free market will now solve it, it's ignorant. It's politically ignorant and policy-wise as well. I can't speak for my other never Trump colleagues. What I will tell you is there is a default mechanism that everything Trump does is wrong and everything Democrats do is right. And that's where the profit industry around this is. Look, I think my friends at the Lincoln Project have done a spectacular work. But if you look at the lane in which they operate in that very powerful negative partisanship world, which is the most effective messaging tool, right? They don't actually do the endorsements of Democrats in a way that wraps themselves around their policies. I've very intentionally stayed out of that negative partisanship lane as best as I have. I think the Republican Party has an identity crisis. It's no longer a debate over ideology. It's a debate over democratic values. And they haven't realized how deep that identity crisis yet is, because electorally, they haven't have to. They're still performing very well. If I was ready to embrace the entire Democratic platform, I'd sign up as a Democrat. But I'm not. And it goes back to what I said early. Just because there's one issue you might agree on, parties typically require you to sign up for the entire suite. And I'm not up for that.
I personally just, if you have a party where a member who supports anti-Semitic and racist and freak show views like QAnon is not going to be expelled from, the party's not going to stand up to her, I don't know how you can call yourself a legitimate party. But that said, where do you see the Republican Party 10 years from now? And your guess, is it savable?
Oh, I think electorally, it will be just as competitive as it is now. And this is important to realize. So I don't think it's coming back, right? Liz Cheney, Ben Sasse were sanctioned by their local parties. That shows where the party is. The heartbeat of the party is in sanctioning people who stood up for democracy in this moment. This is the party of Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan. This is the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I don't mean that trying to assign an invective to them. That's where the heartbeat is. That's where the power is. That's where the fundraising is. And the reason Republicans have engaged in zero self-reflection is they nearly won the House of Representatives back this cycle. They barely lost the presidency, and the Senate is now tied. And so Republican pollsters and leaders look at this and say, look, we're just losing around the margins. If we go through this self-reflection where we look like we're admitting defeat, then they'll live out their own prediction. They're going to double down on this without question. And Republicans believe they'll win the House back in 2 years. So look, I will say about these other Never Trumpers and a lot of people, names you've never heard of, neighbors who just say, I can't be a part of the Republican Party. A lot of leaders in DC think the answer is an alternative conservative party. Where I probably break from the rest of them is exactly what I said. I don't think the hunger in politics right now is for an alternative conservative party. That's not it. I think it's a big tent party, a problem-solving party, one that's not declared moderate in its ideology, but one that welcomes all ideologies and then figures out how to get all these ideologies to work together.
Well, good luck. You're doing God's work. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being here, for joining. I appreciate it.
Hey, good to be with you. Thank you, Adam.
One bit of trivia for you people out there. David Jolly is not only a congressman, but he's a sommelier. It's true.
That's right.
All right. Well, great to see you again. I appreciate it a lot.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks, Adam.
From stpetecatalyst.com.